Howdy, old heads. Kurt Money here, alongside my co-host.
Tis I, Kateline.
Oh my God, you mixed it up on me.
Keep you on your toes.
Woo!
I'm Lester Holt.
We are here to discuss. I honestly do not know if it was a Friday or a Thursday Dateline, because it's a shorty. It might have been a Thursday or Friday. Doesn't matter.
Here's Dennis Murphy with Down the Basement Stairs.
Let's hop right into that IMDb description. All right. When young mother and paramedic Anna Marie Cochran Rintala is found dead at the bottom of her basement stairs, it takes 4 trials and 13 years before justice is served. Hosted by... Murph Dog. He doesn't get anything before it. He doesn't get one and only. Nothing.
No.
Boom shakalaka.
All right, so Kateline, hit me. What did you think about this Dateline?
I liked it.
Okay.
I can't wait to disagree with you.
Okay. So are you trying to tell me that you think she's innocent?
She might be innocent.
Okay. All right, I am going to get fired up about this. Because I wholeheartedly believe that she's guilty. But I'm basing that on extra stuff I found out, including in the After Dateline episode that they did.
Okay, good. This is what I hoped would happen.
Okay.
I hoped that you had done more research
yeah.
so you can convince me. Because right now, I, like several juries, am unconvinced.
Yeah.
Because this woman was on trial 4 times.
Yeah. That's wild. And actually, you know, on the Talking Dateline, Jay Mank was like, have we ever had a case with 4 trials before? And by the end of it, they found one where they did.
So Murph Dog wasn't in the After Dateline?
Oh, he was. It was Jay Mank talking to Murph Dog.
Okay.
I think that's the headline.
And I love Jay Mank. We gotta be buds with this guy.
I know.
But he roasted somebody at the trial. So let's put a pin in that. But he roasted somebody so bad. It might be something that you burned too, but I did not pick up on it.
Oh, there's someone at the trial I want to roast.
Okay. I'll bet it's the same. Okay. We are in Granby, Massachusetts, March 2010. It's a Saturday. Kara Rintala and her daughter, Brianna, come home from a day at the mall in multiple fast food places. And
okay, so right now, that all makes sense. Watching this the first time, how confusing was Murph Dog setting up this episode?
Yeah. Yeah, it was confusing. And then there's the paint element to it.
Yes.
Which was...
heartbreaking. Incomprehensible.
All right, so Kara comes home and sees at the bottom of the basement stairs the feet of her wife, Anna Marie. She is dead at the bottom of the stairs. She freaks out, grabs Brianna, takes her to the neighbors, hands Brianna over, says, call 911, my wife's in the basement. And then she runs back home.
Now, Kara is a paramedic, so in her mind, she's going back to see if she can help at all before the police get there. That's what she said.
And you think that's why she's going back?
That's what she said, at least.
Okay.
She's going to go back and try to administer help. She needs the daughter to be taken care of. They need 911 on the way. She's going to go see what she can do.
Right. And what did she do when she got down there? What did she do, any paramedic stuff or?
No.
I know now. I couldn't work on a loved one.
It was a poignant picture, to be sure. A dead wife. A devastated spouse, a little girl who'd lost a mother.
The way Murph Dog set all that up, like what you just said makes sense. But he was using feminine pronouns in an even more confusing way where I was like, how many women are in this basement? Because at one point he then said something about a woman laying across
right.
Anna Marie's legs. And I was like, there's another dead body? But then it was like, oh no, it's just Kara like holding her wife sobbing as the paramedics arrive. It's like, this is just 2 women. And now all of a sudden there's like a third woman. Were you confused by that too?
I agree with you that the phrasing of that made me very confused, and it made me think there's another person involved here that I don't know about. But I'm gonna stick up for Murph Dog a little bit, because that phrasing that he used has to do with the fact that what Kara did was go to the body, bear hug her, and then roll over with her on top of her. And that's why she was on top of her. And the reason why it looked weird to the paramedics was because rigor mortis had set in and her arms were stuck in this position. So her body had been dead for at least 7 hours because they were stuck like this.
Stuck straight up.
They were suspended from the ground. Sorry. Yeah, you're right. Podcast. Oh, boy.
So her arms are kind of starfishing out. They're up.
Yeah, like the fact was that they were suspended from the ground without Kara holding them up because they had gone into rigor mortis in another position, basically.
Yeah.
But I agree with you. That phrasing doesn't make sense. And I don't know. I never grasp a Dateline on the first watch, which is a good thing, but it was confusing at first. But it's then I listened to it a few times. And I'm like, okay, now I get it. But yeah, it's a weird way to kick it off.
It's confusing because Kara knew a lot of these first responders since she was a paramedic.
Yeah.
So the fact that Murph Dog is just saying, and they've come and they find a woman laying across her body, and it's like, well, no, they know Kara and they know Anna. It was very disorienting.
A surreal scene because both Kara and her wife were paramedics, had worked with some of these same responders, now helping an hysterical Kara out from beneath her wife's body.
But I'll say this, I was, well, two things. One, as soon as I realized that Brianna was their kid, the two fast food spots made sense. When I heard that they left McDonald's to go to Burger King and they ordered mac and cheese, Kate, my head was spinning. I was like, what the f*** are you describing and why aren't you talking about every inch of this story? Who leaves McDonald's to go to Burger King and gets mac and cheese? A child does.
Yes.
Now it makes total sense. They have a mac and cheese Happy Meal. I looked it up. I also looked up some facts about when Granby started doing pay as you throw trash, which is part of my investigation that I did today, Caitlin. Okay?
Yes. But Burger King doesn't have Happy Meals.
Good point. You got me there. Kids meal. Do they call them kids' meals, probably?
Probably. Burger King gave me E. coli, and I never went back.
When?
2004.
You haven't eaten at Burger King in 20 years?
Yes.
Wow. Is that hard? Surely, between then and now, you've been out with friends, and they've gone to Burger King.
No.
No. It's never happened.
No.
The police arrive, and Kara's hysterical. And actually, this was no joke. I love it when there's a point in the episode where I can pinpoint exactly when my position was written in stone that she was guilty, was when the cop, I could tell by them using this clip of the cop going, she was crying, lots of crying. He was saying it like a jag at her, like lots of crocodile tears.
Right.
And so then I was like, oh, sounds like Kara did it.
Crying. Lots of crying.
They don't arrest her right away, though. The cops are suspicious, obviously, because also Kara doesn't know how the paint got there. Like, they take her back to the police station to interview her, and she's sitting with the detective, and they're like, what's the paint doing there? And her answer was, oh, it's been down there for months. But was it open? I don't...
Well, she said, I honestly have no idea how the paint got all over. It's just been in the basement for months. I assume that if they've used it before, then they've broken the seal, and if the paint can falls, it could pop open again.
Yeah, but it wasn't a can. It was a square container. It really wasn't by the stairs, though. Like, they were right in that the geography of it being a fall doesn't work with the paint.
You couldn't fall directly down those stairs and tip that paint over.
It wasn't a can. It was in, like, a pan that you use a roller on.
It was a bucket that was kind of both. It threw me off, too, but I could tell that it was... You could see the paint bucket that they were, and it had like a tray built into it, kind of.
So it was just open?
That's my question. And then how does it get all over? And I think the only thing that fits is that she threw it on her as part of her cover-up. I mean, I think it was a desperate move in a desperate situation.
Do you think she threw it on her when she went back after dropping Brianna off at the neighbor's?
I think that's exactly what she did. That's what the prosecutor guessed, and also the paint drying expert, which we got to discuss. Now, they... Okay, wait. Well, let's get to that trial first. Once we make it to the 2016 trial, then it'll be open season and we'll just talk about whatevs, right?
Yes.
Okay, so they interview Kara, and right away they're asking her about their domestic issues because Kara and Anna Marie have a history.
It was tumultuous. They both have restraining orders against each other.
Yeah.
They were in court trying to argue over custody of Brianna. The judge at one point scolded them and told them to get their act together. And
if I see that come into this court, I will be on the phone to DCF so fast.
After that, they kind of tried to make it work again for the sake of Brianna. So they were still married and living together and going to church together every week when this happened.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But then we learn about why they would get into fights and the kind of stuff that Anna was doing on the side.
They're both doing on the side. What started their argument in the text that they showed was that the night before, Anna Marie was doing a night shift as a paramedic, and a male friend of Kara's had come over with a six-pack. And that's what they were fighting about. Dateline mentions a male friend coming over, but I feel like that little detail about the six-pack gives you a little bit more info, does it not? What do you think?
What info does it give, other than they were hanging out?
Yeah, I guess. I don't know. It just sounds suspicious to me. That's all. But you're right. If I was going to hang out with somebody and I drank, I'd bring a six-pack.
So they're trying to say that Anna Marie was jealous that Kara was hanging out with a man.
I'm offering that when they're text fighting, Anna Marie is accusing Kara of being unfaithful, but she's texting Mark, the other guy that she texted, I was going to kiss you this morning, the married guy.
Yeah. So
they're both at fault is what I'm saying.
Well, how is Kara at fault? She didn't do anything.
Well, she did get physical with her.
Yeah, but she wasn't cheating.
She was. That was not presented in the Dateline.
That was not in the Dateline.
Future Kurt here. Current Kurt is hella wrong. Okay, Kara was not unfaithful to Anna Marie. Or Anna Marie. I think I call them both ways. Might be on that. Current Kurt's be on that, not me. Future Kurt is perfect. Anyway, here's the point. I went back and read that article I was talking about. No mention of Kara being unfaithful. But I did realize that article was written by Joe McGinnis. Okay, Joe McGinnis wrote Fatal Vision, which is about the Jeffrey McDonald case, which I've mentioned in passing a few times and is like true crime classic, I guess. I don't know. I don't want to call it royalty. Let's not call it true crime royalty. Let's just call it a famous true crime story that I'm very, very familiar with. That guy's like a famous author. Errol Morris wrote a book on it, all this stuff. Anyway, guy died in 2014. This was like the last case he was reporting on. The case of Kara Rantala. That's crazy, right? And actually the last article I found was he got in trouble for posting about the case on Facebook because he had a deal with like Boston Magazine to write about it just for them. So he was still stern in his 80s. The guy died just 10 years ago. But anyway, point is later, when I reference an article, I'm talking about the one written by Joe McGinnis, which is crazy. Okay, so later when you hear article, I'm going to put like maybe a little touch of the Dick Cavett theme song or something. So you know the one I'm talking about. Because Jeffrey McDonald was on Dick Cavett the 70s, even though he killed his wife. Anyway, it's a whole thing. Point is, Dateline was correct. Kara is not unfaithful. Back to the show.
They made it seem like she was hanging out with a man and Anna got mad at her, even though Kara is clearly not interested in men.
Come on.
And Anna is the one who was texting and hanging out with married men and somehow was able to spend thousands of dollars in all of these dudes' money. Which to me points to motive. Some of these men didn't like that she was toying with them and racking up all that debt.
But that's not true at all because when you look into those men, they were all very cool with her. Like there was no history of them being upset about the money whatsoever and she was paying them back. Now, I'll talk all day about how absurd it is that she asked her friends to co-sign for a credit card. They said yes. Then she just went on a shopping spree. I mean, that's baffling to me. That's a real problem.
Yes.
But I think it's very clear, though, that the credit card debt was not hounding her from them. For whatever reason, they seemed to be okay with it.
Well, they told investigators they were okay with it.
But there's proof of her paying it back. Like, there's not one text or email or anything where they're saying, where's my money or what's up?
There was nothing to suggest that Mark was upset about that outstanding debt. She was paying him back for that debt.
The cops looked at these men and, as you said, nothing seemed suspicious. So the focus went back to Kara.
Well, it was one man and one woman because there was another woman, just to make it more confusing, whose name was Carla.
And from Carla's perspective, perhaps the love of her life was coming back to her.
And she was another one that they thought, like, maybe she wanted to piss him off. Like, you think about if it wasn't the wife, who could it be? Like, who else would have motive to want to come over here and kill her? Those, you know, that guy and that girl are two viable options. But they checked him out and their alibis checked out. So, I don't know. Are you suspicious of them? Because you're sitting here, you're pro Kara right now. You're team Kara. So are you thinking it's one of those two?
I am suspicious of the man.
Okay, yeah. That's fair. Because look, he got a text that morning. They were meeting at Best Buy at 6 a.m.
Why were they meeting there so early?
Who knows?
Or wait, wasn't the text like,
can you please go sat at 6A for me? I will get there about 8:25 a.m. with a coffee and a big kiss.
Why would he be there for 2 hours and 5 minutes waiting for her at Best Buy?
I don't know. I don't remember. Best Buy's closed at 6 a.m. unless it's like Thanksgiving or something.
It's so weird.
Could it have been Mark? I don't think so, but he's definitely a person of interest. Right? And like this, he's like, you can call him whatever you want, suspect, person of interest, but these exes, we wanted to look into him.
She was on the short list of persons of interest or suspects, call them what you will.
But I feel like they crossed him off. They wanted to talk to Kara again. Now, there's 18 months in between the crime and the first trial. And I think it's because she got her hands on a really good lawyer. Because I was reading this article about how it's like the most high-powered attorney in Boston or whatever the f***, and how they wanted to talk to her a second time, but as soon as she got this lawyer, she refused to talk to him. Which, you know, good on you. But so, 18 months later, the cops have enough stuff to present at a trial. And what they have on this is, according to Kara, do they call her Ann or Anna? Because another weird part is that part of her name is Cochran, and that's her previous marriage name. Anyway, that's not for pot.
Was she married to a man?
That I don't know. That I don't know.
I would bet she was.
Maybe. Yeah.
Because lesbians don't flirt with men.
Well, look, it is possible. I know that Kara looks like a gold star lesbian, but you don't know what she gets up to. She might be boning dudes. What? No?
She's not boning dudes.
You're confident. Okay. All right. Fair. So Kara's story is that around 3 p.m., Anna Marie asked her to take Brianna and just get out of the house. Just go. That was her instructions. So I can take a nap because I got to start my night shift later. So they go shopping. They go to like the Gap and they buy a bunch of inconsequential little stuff, they're saying. They go to a McDonald's. They see him on the security cam. The truck is making rounds. And they even see on the camera Kara get out of her truck in pouring rain, walk across the parking lot to the furthest trash can in a line of trash cans, and throw out three rags, one of which had DNA potentially from the victim on it. Now, that's here nor there because they live together, so I'm not putting any weight in that DNA fact.
Right. Of course, both of their DNA is going to be on those rags. It came from their house.
Right, but I am putting weight into the fact that she threw out three towels in a McDonald's parking lot in the rain. What's your thinking there?
I didn't realize that it was the furthest trash can and that she couldn't drive up closer to the cans.
Yeah.
So you're saying that you did some research about their trash collection theory?
Now this trash can thing.
The city does something weird with their trash.
Right. We are so close to being able to go there. So they have the first trial in 2013. 3-week trial, hung jury. They can't decide. She goes home. They try again the very next year. Hung jury number 2.
Yep.
So that's nuts. So now again, Jay Mank's talking about this on the pod of like, it's weird. Usually prosecutors would drop it at this point because like they only want to take cases they can win. To keep going or having more and more at bats for this murder is very weird.
Yes.
They talk to the family or whatever. And in 2016, there's a third trial. And this is where we're introduced to the paint expert, which, oh, do you know how much fun Murph Dog had when he got to say, a guy who literally, actually, watches paint dry.
They brought in a paint expert, a guy who literally watches paint dry.
He really did watch paint dry.
He loved it.
That's not my issue with this guy. I have never in my life seen such a weird, cheap-looking suit. This man is wearing a very padded pinstripe suit that is rippling everywhere. There's pulling and puckering and rippling all over it. It looks like someone made a suit out of materials that you're not supposed to make suits out of. I have no idea where he purchased this suit.
Yeah.
It was so distracting. I couldn't even focus on whatever he was saying. Which I'm sure was also whack, because anyone who can wear that suit, how am I going to trust their opinion about anything?
Well, you're going to love this, okay? And this will be your bond that you have with Jay Mank when we finally meet the guy. Was his roast, Caitlin. That was his roast in the pod.
Really?
He said...
Okay, I got a couple of questions about the paint guy. That guy needs to spend every penny of the expert witness money that he's getting on a better suit. Because that one has seen better days.
And Jay Mank.
Wait, people get money to be a witness?
Expert witness, I guess. Yeah. I mean, that's why like our faves are all... That's why Werner Spitz is doing it all the damn time. Dr. Lee, those guys, right?
Yeah.
But
that comes out of like taxpayer money?
That I don't know. I wasn't sure if they got paid, but Jay Mank saying that makes me think that they do. I noticed that suit when I was watching the app. It did not click with me. That looks disgusting and he should change it. It's like, I remember thinking, oh, what's up with his suit? It looks like it's bubbling like cheap patio furniture does.
Yes.
When it rains or something weird.
Mm-hmm.
But it didn't grab me like it did you and J-Mank. And I just love that you guys both had the exact Same point.
Also, that courtroom had a lot of windows. Whoever was sitting up on the stand was kind of backlit by the sun in an interesting way that I haven't seen in a courtroom before.
Yeah.
And it emphasized the rippling and the puckering on that suit. You could see every single line.
Yeah, it didn't look good. Now, I'm not going to roast this guy for him being a paint expert or whatever, because he did tests and stuff, and I have additional paint info to give you that I read about, okay?
Mm-hmm.
But I'm not here for that attorney roasting him or, like, being sarcastic.
Yes, and the judge was like, counselor, let's keep the sarcasm to a minimum.
Well, yeah, because they objected. The other team was like, can you change the tone? And before they were even done doing the objection, the judge was like, sustained.
Uh-huh.
Sustained.
Please change the tone.
But I think that's a good point. Like, fuck you. I don't know. Anyway, I was mad on behalf of the paint expert when that guy was given that tone. Now, his whole argument is like, you are believing a paramedic that said the paint was wet when he arrived. That's what you're basing this info on. That's the defense's whole argument, is like, what kind of expert is this if some of the info is coming from the opinion of blah, 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 right?
Mm-hmm.
However, one, you can tell from the photos of the paint that it is wet, right? It's not dry. And also, the brand of paint is Glidden or Glidden or whatever. But I read this article, by the way, on like the Boston Globe or something, that specific paint, when first applied, it has a pink hue to it. And then when it dries completely, it's white.
Okay.
Now, knowing that fact, when you watch this episode and you see those pictures of that paint,
it's pink.
One, it looks wet as but it's kind of pink. It's kind of pink.
Yeah, I did notice it was pink.
And so
it kind of looked like Pepto-Bismol a little bit.
Yeah.
And then there were areas that were more white, which obviously were the dry parts.
Yeah, so I don't think it has anything to do with this opinion that he's trusting of what, because it was like from the photos, you can get the information that you need.
I think it's primer. I think it's not actually a top coat paint. It's primer.
Oh, maybe.
Primer is often a different color.
Oh, when you apply it and then it dries, you're saying?
Uh-huh.
Oh, cool. I get why they didn't say primer specifically, though, because I feel like you, those of you that are smart and stuff, I that would have confused me, I suppose.
Okay. Those of you like me that are geniuses. Got it.
Geniuses. Yeah, yeah, yeah. Look, you're the techspert, and you're also the home renovation expert. So this is your cross to bear, Kate. Yeah?
We don't like flips.
No, we don't. No, we don't. You know, they just covered 48 Hours just did that. That lady, that Paige Turner episode. They just did it last week.
Really?
Yeah.
Corey, the page turner.
Yeah.
I mean, this is creepy.
So the expert during this third trial, I mean, she's found guilty in this third trial, correct?
Yes.
But they appeal it.
She is sentenced.
Is that what happens?
She goes to prison and they appeal it.
For life? And
I don't remember.
Did she get the full hog? Like
life without parole.
But either way, she's in prison. It's like a win at this point. And then they appeal based on the fact that paint drying is junk science. I mean, they didn't use those words, but that's, they're basically saying that you can't trust this guy because he's not an expert like he says. To which I would say, okay, then apply that to all of your other experts. They're only experts because you had them up there and you called them an expert. Experts can't even agree on time of death because the defense was able to find a lady that said it could have happened after 3 p.m.
Right.
Give an opinion as to whether or not you could rule out Ian Marie Rantala dying after 3 o'clock.
I could not rule that out.
Their opinions.
But yeah, I guess I'm just, like the only thing that's positive is DNA. Everything else is gray, I think. I don't, someone is an expert, but also not an expert. That's just what it is. I don't know. I don't know how you clarify this is an expert guy that we're going to believe.
Because you can't have a PhD in paint.
Right. They were, when J-Make was roasting him, they were talking about him. So that guy's an engineer of some kind that I think studied paint drying for this purpose, maybe.
That's...
which is also confusing.
I think that that is totally grounds for an appeal. Absolutely.
Yep. And they got it. And they got a fourth trial that happened last October. And
they had a different strategy with this trial. In the previous trials, they were trying to focus more on the other possible suspects, or they were trying to focus on, I forget how they're focused.
Why they couldn't be them.
They were trying to focus on why those other suspects couldn't possibly have done it. But in this fourth trial, they focused on why Kara did it. They didn't really talk about the others in this one. They just went straight for her and it worked.
Did it? Because, again, something that happened that I didn't know could happen where juries could say, yeah, she's guilty, but not of the big one. She's guilty of this little thing. What's up with that? Why do they get to say it's not even second-degree murder, it's voluntary manslaughter? Why do they get to say that?
Maybe it's a rule with the fact that it's an appeal and not the initial trial.
Okay.
But it's all about intent. And I guess they saw that she didn't wake up that day thinking she was going to kill her wife. It wasn't planned. It just happened in an argument or a heated discussion, and one thing led to another.
Yeah, I mean, you know what? You're right there. I wouldn't want her getting murder one either, because I genuinely believe what happened was they had a physical altercation like they have in the past, and she fell or something. And as Murph Dog, I gotta give him credit. He was like, a prosecutor told me this years ago. Sometimes you just gotta finish what you started.
As a law enforcement friend said to me, Josh, years ago, sometimes you have to finish what you started and you gotta carry through.
And I think that's what this scenario was, where she got in a fight, accidentally pushed her. There's a big thing in her head and she's like, well, I'm not gonna take the heat for this. They're gonna take away my kid. Well, what am I gonna do? Ah! And then she came up with her plan.
Wasn't she also strangled?
Yeah, so that's the thing. She's got lacerations and shit on her head, right? But there are not ligature marks, but they know, wait, I wrote this down specifically, that they do know for a fact that she had broken capillaries in her eyes and hemorrhaging in muscles near the larynx, but no ligature marks. But that just means that she didn't use a rope, that they used their hands. Isn't that what that means?
Yep.
So she didn't just fall. At some point, she was being choked.
I would assume before the fall.
Yeah.
Or she fell, hit her head, was clearly dying, and Kara choked her out to finish it.
Yes, that's what I think it was. That they were fighting, and maybe she pushed her down the stairs, maybe, or something. Something that made her think, the classic, well, they'd never believe me. Well, they'd never believe me if I told them it was an accident.
But they would have. Kara should have called 911 and said, my wife just fell.
But I think what she's guilty of is hiding that fact so that it would not jeopardize her relationship with her daughter. And the reason why that is so upsetting to me, and why I'm mad that she's going to get out in 10 years or whatever. Because she got like time served and she'll be out in 4 years or something.
Because
right?
the manslaughter charge is a lesser sentence and she already did like 7 years or something.
Well, yeah, I mean, because this has been going on for 13 years or whatever, and she's out on bond for some of that. She's in jail for some of it, but she's done at least 5 years of her sentence, at least.
But Brianna was in court at her sentencing and read a letter to the judge, and it was pretty heartbreaking.
I need my mom. This case started when I was very young. I do not remember my mother, Anne, at all.
She doesn't know Anna and made that very clear. That Kara is her only living parent and she needs her in her life. And then Anna's family was like, Brianna doesn't even know her. Brianna doesn't know Anna at all. And also doesn't actually know Kara. Because if she doesn't remember Anna, she doesn't remember Kara either, because Kara's been in prison.
Yeah, and she's had a relationship with her, like through visitations and stuff. But this was the most heartbreaking thing for me. And the family member of Anna spoke to it. And I think that was just her former sister-in-law, too. Like, that wasn't even, like, blood. The only blood that was here for Anna's side was Uncle Pasquale. How about that name?
Oh, my gosh. The Irish-Italian family. Pasquale Martin.
Pasquale's sweet. I didn't like him, though, because he had a sweatshirt that said New England versus the world. I don't know what context that is, but I think it's bullshit.
It sounds like it's a Patriots thing. I always think it's weird when people have hometown pride.
I get that, yeah. And you come from a place where people really have it, too. I mean, I'm not going to say, obviously.
That might be why I'm just like, ew, shut up.
But I don't, and I hate it, too. But this confirms that it's not just I'm jealous that I'm not, like, from New York City or something.
New York City!
Especially if they don't still live there. It's like, if you love it so much, why'd you leave?
It's a good cue. Murph Dog was shocked that more people weren't talking about it was because they were gay. Which I thought was kind of weird. I was like, Murph Dog, I get it. Because I looked it up. It was legal in Massachusetts in 2003. So when they went to the courthouse, it had just been in the news. Or whatever.
Murph Dog is always weird when people are gay.
Yeah. And he was kind of doing it on the pod. I'm not coming after him that he's being homophobic. It's just that his angle is still, that's the story to him.
Right.
That it was a lesbian couple. And I just want to go like, Murph Dog, you should roll with it that they're just like all the other couples that we talk about murdering each other. Like, let's not address it.
Mm-hmm. You know, I'm struck all these years later how little of interest there is that this is a same-sex couple marriage.
Yeah, this is a couple that we, the kind of couple that we cover all the time. And they're, sometimes they're happy and sometimes they're not happy.
So I don't know where I stand.
Okay, yeah, yeah. Because I haven't even, I'm still sitting on stuff.
I really want to hear the hot goss. Change my mind.
Okay. So here's a big one that I'm shocked Dateline didn't bring it up, is they can see in the bed of her truck when she's cruising around McDonald's and stuff, there was a red bag and a laundry basket in the trunk of this truck. When they left McDonald's, it was still in the bed of that truck. But when they got home, that bag and that laundry basket are nowhere to be found and have never been found to this day. What do you think about that?
So she threw it out somewhere.
Yeah, but she didn't say that. She didn't answer what it was. I mean, this is a mysterious thing that was in the truck and is no longer.
But the trash thing in that town is weird.
Okay, right. You reminded me about that bomb that I teased, but I didn't drop, so here comes the dropping. Kara's mom is on the show, and I didn't care for her. This was actually a previous episode in 2017, and it was called At the Bottom of the Stairs, or something very similar. But they covered this, but just like Dateline does, they wipe it all from the internet when they have the new one. This is why I'm a little irked at the show. You can't find anything on that episode, but it existed. And you search, and everything is from December 15th. And it's like, what power does NBC have over SEO? Like, how can they do that? What do you think?
They have money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's true. Now, here comes the trash bomb. Are you ready for this?
Hit me.
The mom on Dateline is saying, well, yeah, that's easy to explain. She threw out three rags because you have to pay per bag in Granby. You have to pay per bag, so they throw out the trash when they can.
They had to pay for their trash bags in Granby, so they were dumping their trash wherever and whenever they could.
Now, it is true that you have to pay as you throw, as they call it, in Granby. But I found an article from October of 2011 saying that Granby will be moving to the pay-as-you-throw system in the new year of 2012. This murder happened in 2010. It was not under that trash policy then. So this mom's talking out of her ass. What do you think?
Wow, Kurt. I hope the prosecution did their research and knew that, especially because they live in Granby.
Yeah, I mean, that was never presented in trial. That's the mom's defense. But it just irritates me because I bet it's a defense that she came up with probably around the second trial when it's been the law for 3 years.
And she's been using it ever since.
Yeah, when it's like, no, sorry. Not when she was alive. It wasn't true. And here's another reason why I didn't like those two. Is because when Murph Dog says, like, hey, that's great that they went to the courthouse and they got married and stuff. And what's the one line they got out of Kara's mom about the whole ceremony? Do you remember what she said?
No.
This was all she had to say about her daughter getting married. Well, Anna really wanted the same last name as Brianna. She didn't really want to do it. That's what she said. That's what she said.
That's what Kara's mom said?
Yes. That Kara only did it because Anna Marie wanted to have the same last name as their daughter.
Well, I don't think that Kara would have gotten married, but Anne really wanted to have the same last name as Brianna.
And that was in response to Murph Dog saying, hey, that's great. They're making their love official. And that was her response. What do you think about that?
So they just never really loved each other.
Yeah.
Even though there were friends and other people in the community who said that they seemed like the perfect couple. They were always taking vacations. They were always happy together in church. But I guess they were just putting on appearances.
Well, yeah. Or they had good times and bad times, and one of the bad times got really bad. I think they were a doomed relationship like many others. And it just, the worst thing happened. But I've got a little bit more info to give you. So wait, where do we stand right now? Are you still think she didn't do it, or did?
No, I think she did it. I agree the outcome of this fourth trial, where it was not premeditated, it just happened, and then instead of doing the rational thing that would have kept her out of prison by being like, help, she fell, instead she just finished it.
Yeah, and I guess you're right. She did get what I believe she deserved.
Mm-hmm.
But what frustrates me is how, in the eyes of the killer's parents and of the victim's daughter, that's an injustice to them. And like we were saying, that daughter is in court saying the lady's name, her mom's name. Like, the mom I know is in prison. And I just want to go, that's because you were four when your mom was murdered by your other mom. That's why you don't remember her, because she was murdered by the person that you go see once a month. Why would you acknowledge anything that she's saying? She's the reason that that woman was murdered, is so that she could be the only one in her life. Kara's parents are saying, like, it's an injustice. I bet Kara's in jail loving it. She's been the only mom in Brianna's life for 16 years.
The fact that I was witness to Brianna sitting sitting in that courtroom and didn't even call her mom. Called her Ann Cochran. She did not know who she was.
She got what she wanted.
Hmm.
What do you think?
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
And guess what? I got another little juicy tidbit. During one of the times when they had their domestic issues where they call the cops on each other, there was a 4-minute recording of a 911 call that Kara made the year prior where you could not understand what she was saying. She was so upset. The few things you could understand was her saying, "She's gonna take my daughter away from me." What do you think about that?
Mm. So when they were fighting and she pushed her and Anna fell, Kara is immediately thinking, I'm going to lose custody because of this unless I finish the job.
Yeah. And I wish she could be honest about it. Had she been one, she might have been found innocent or whatever, like we're suggesting. Or the worst could have happened, she still would have been out by now.
Totally. From the original sentencing.
Yeah. And so, because that's pretty concerning to me, a 4-minute phone call on 911 where you cannot understand the person, but what you can understand is stuff. Okay, I'm going to read this. On May 12th, 2009, someone made a 911 call from the Rentala home. The dispatcher heard a woman screaming, "Just leave, just leave." But when police arrived at the scene, both women said Brianna had accidentally dialed the phone number. The same day, however, Kara filed for divorce. Then, on May 26th, which is like 2 weeks later, she made a tearful 911 call to Granby Police that lasted 4.5 minutes. She was so hysterical that the dispatcher could hear only snippets of what she was saying. "She's threatening to take my daughter from me," she said, sobbing. "I'm being threatened. I can't get a hold of my lawyers." She concluded by saying, "I need help." What do you think?
Hmm. Messy.
Very messy. Very messy. Wait. Okay. They had that. It was weird. So they had that recording of the judge, like, scolding them.
Mm-hmm.
Where the judge was like, "Another word and I'm going to call child services or whatever."
Yep.
So I've got his full statement and I'm going to read you the first half of it. It's better than that part. They should have read the whole statement. You ready for this?
Okay.
Hang on. "You're going to have to deal with it. I don't think either of you are stable enough to be parents. I am this close to filing criminal charges against both of you." That also wasn't in there.
No, it wasn't.
But that judge, that was part of that judge's statement. So J-Mank has given props to the producer of that episode for having that recording in there.
"I will be on the phone to DCF so fast."
And in that moment, I felt bad for having strong opinions about the production of Dateline sometimes that are negative. And I thought, if I look at this as a perspective of, like, the production team, they're getting what they can, blah, blah, blah. And when J-Mank shouted her out as saying, like, "It's cool that she was able to get this recording," they played it in the court. The trial was recorded. She didn't have to do any legwork for that recording. It's in the trial.
Wow.
That's a great thing to have, is that little piece of audio.
I think it's list time. Kurt, you've changed my mind. I think Kara did it.
Okay. Yeah, and she didn't do it on purpose,
mm-hmm.
but she definitely did it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Justice has been served, though.
Yeah. I'm bummed for Brianna the rest of her life. She thinks her mom is wronged and is in prison. I was like, mm-mm. All right, Kate, so hit me with your list. Did you have anything tonight?
Kate's unnamed list. I don't have a damn thing.
Well, you don't. One of their many trips they went on was to Florida.
I knew they were away in Florida, and they were full of light.
I don't think that counts, but I'm just putting that out there.
It doesn't count.
Okay. That was the trip that they had returned from, I believe.
Well, I don't know. Maybe we should make it count, because I haven't had anything in a while.
Sure.
But typically,
I'll throw it in there.
I like when a suspect has spent time in Florida, and they keep it kind of vague, but it's like, you know, murderers be in Florida.
Yeah.
For periods of time, and it's always kind of like, what are they doing there? We don't know.
There's something in the air,
mm-hmm.
or the water, or whatever, in Florida. If you spend there long enough, you're going to come out a little kooky.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. J-Mank even called her a phone-aholic, which was not his word originally. That was also presented at the trial, that she was a phone-aholic, that she's always texting people. But it's also a fact that on that Saturday, she sent 58 texts and calls, and then at 12:21 p.m., they stopped. 12:21, by the way, is in the exact hour window of when multiple experts said that she had died.
But she stopped then, and then Kara started calling and texting her right after that, even though she left to go run errands so that Anna could nap. And then she's calling and texting trying to get a hold of her for no reason other than to make it look like she hadn't just killed her.
Yeah. Because
it's like, if you know she's napping, why would you be calling constantly?
Yeah, and the voicemails, you could tell, again, they're saying this was theater. I love it. They called it theater. When she was like, please, please, please call me back.
Prosecutors played voicemail. All play acting, they said.
On our way, Burger King, call. Please, please, please.
It is 1:53. We are at McDonald's. Like, time stamping her every move.
Yeah. Yeah.
Kurt's kick-ass list.
Kick-ass list. Kick-ass list.
No. I don't have anything. I thought I had a movie one, but I think I was just thinking of last week's. So yeah, I don't have anything, but that list still stands. Oh my God. Okay, what do we think of Murph Dog overall? Like, do you think more of him now or less? We're always on a constant battle of what we think of Murph Dog. He's always on the chopping block for us. How do you do today?
Well, I would say nothing's changed for me, but I didn't hear him on that extra pod given some kind of background and insight. Maybe he was real charming and cute. I don't know.
He called J-Make Bud.
Hey, Bud, how are you doing?
That was cool. Oh, I did notice this is going to be, it's not a segment or anything, but I'm going to take note whenever Murph Dog says, well, that makes your nose twitch a little.
He does say that a lot.
Does he say that a lot?
That must make your nose twitch when a guy doesn't give you the straight out story.
Huh.
That's his line. Okay. And he also, look, Keystone Cops is an old ass ref, but I guess it's generic enough. It's okay. Because Keystone Cops is a phrase for shitty cops beyond it being comedy from like the 1920s.
Right.
The trooper was vital to the defense theory of a Keystone Cops investigation.
But anyway, they did like a little Q&A thing where they were answering questions from the public and stuff, which I usually stop listening to because I got no interest, but they had a few good cues. One of which was, here's the thing. It was said as a snarky thing, but J-Mank gave a real answer and it was awesome. Somebody said, I'm just waiting for the day when Dateline does a show about a guy that nobody liked and was killed, right? The usual roast of like, when are they going to do one on a bad guy? Like, it's always somebody that everybody loved or whatever. Murph Dog said, we could do that if you want a 3-minute Dateline. To which I say, bravo, Murph. Don't give these f**ks an answer because they think they're being funny is what they're doing right now. I'm not here for it and you shouldn't be either. J-Mank, though, answers it seriously and goes, we have done ones on people that people don't like. And he named one, Kate. He said Stone Cold, season 27, episode 13. People didn't like him.
Wow.
That's pretty cool, huh? That's pretty cool.
Ballsy.
And what's funny is when he answered that, he goes, Stone Cold. And I'm already going like, I hope he checked if it's on Peacock because it's probably not on the cock, right? It's probably an episode that's not on there for some reason. But then, while I'm sitting there Googling to see if I can find it, he says,
in my episode that I mentioned, Stone Cold, that can also be found on Peacock, season 27, episode 13.
Like, he tells you exactly the one. And I was like, J-Mag.
Did you watch it?
I started it at 8:07, but then I realized then I'd be thinking of that Dateline.
Oh.
And I was like, we're recording in 51 minutes. Can't do it.
But you're watching it right now.
Yeah. Next week, what do we got? We will be discussing The Room Downstairs. I'm Kurt Buddy.
I'm Caitlin.
I'm Lester Holt. For all of us, I'm Lester Holt. Good night.
She's not boning dudes.